You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. The show with the hottest takes.
I still don't think it's 100% he's leaving. I don't think it's 100%.
I think it's still 50-50. It is not 50-50.
I'm not sure it's 50-50. There was some honesty in that comment. Why do you have to bring up the coats and the boots and the cold?
The lines of those it's 95-5.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Jeff texting into 1050-50 saying, wow, boys, between the Twitter poll question off the top and that riveting discussion about gorillas and gorillas, this is either the best or worst show you've ever done.
I think it's the best.
You would say best.
No, but I'm trying to stay positive.
I think it's somewhere close to the worst.
It's in the bottom scale. Yeah. It's in the bottom third, put it that way. But I thought we had a good 4 o'clock hour. I thought our conversation with Ray was good, just delayed.
Yeah, there were some technical issues there, but for the most part, it was okay. I think our LeBron chat was all right. It wasn't riveting necessarily.
It's because Mullins came out of the gate with Rage Against the Machine.
Right.
And then all of a sudden...
Yeah, blame Mullen. It was Mullen's fault.
It's Mullen's fault. He's still in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, and the poll question we referenced, or I just referenced, was from earlier this afternoon because Kevin Pillar was speaking with the media today.
Right.
And we'll get to that clip in just a moment. But for those of you not familiar, the gist of it was the vets that Marcus Stroman was talking about and basically pumping the tires of. Pillar saying, it's not like they were all that great anyway.
Yeah.
And I think Pillar was essentially saying, hey, it's our time to be a vet, and I don't need more vets. We'll take care of business here.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that attitude. But it sounds as if the last 2 years, when they haven't won any games, and there's been a lot of turnover and a lot of turmoil, there's been a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes that we're not privy to that I think all Jays fans would love to become privy to.
Hence your poll question.
Hence my poll question. So I was asking. I thought this was borderline creative. I've been getting carved online, and we threw up a poll question asking how stupid the poll question was in itself. And, of course, people are saying, yes, it was a very stupid poll question. But I asked if you could only read one tell-all story of a two-season stretch, which story would you read? The story of the 15 and 16 seasons when they went to the ALCS in back-to-back years, a.k.a. the glory years, where it was nothing but positivity and fun and good times.
But I don't care about that. Why do I care about Joey Bats on like an electric? Didn't he drive to the...
Yeah, he had a scooter. Yeah, David Price was acquired and Tulo was acquired.
I want to hear the meat.
Or you would vote for the other option.
Mm-hmm.
The 17 and 18 season. The tell-all books about those two seasons where it's been an absolute gas can and turmoil and turnover and guys popping off. And
Russell Martin managing the last game of the season.
Right. John Gibbons obviously having a hate-on for the organization in the front office. And there was real turmoil there and dissension between those two parties. And so it was more just my curiosity. I'm like, you know, what would get you rocking? What would make you jump online or walk into a bookstore and say, that's what I want to read?
But you also said, if you're worried about those 2 years, the down years for the Jays, then you're not a real Torontonian based on some of the other experiences that you've had with the Leafs, with the Blue Jays before,
with the Raptors. Exactly. Like, as bad as the last two seasons have been, they've been amplified because of the previous 2 years, where 15 and 16, it was so positive and such a fun ride, and Anthopoulos was here, and, you know, good guy John Gibbons was goofing around with the media.
It's just like the newspaper. We discussed this. You walk by it, and the headline's like, oh, what a nice charity thing in a park. But you get something that's just gross on there.
Right.
Flies off the shelves.
I can tell you which book I think would sell more copies.
No kidding.
It's the 17 and 18. Shots at Shapiro.
What do you think?
Shots at Atkins.
Yeah, if there was one for the Maple Leafs, the 10 years of just an absolute sideshow, or the turning it around, getting Matthews.
Marner,
Nylander, Babcock coming. Making the playoffs, dude, nobody wants this. They want to know the juicy stuff of what the hell was going on during that year. What Phil was like with the coaches.
Publicly, people would try to convince themselves and others that they would rather lean towards the positivity. But, you know, the proof is generally in the pudding. The salacious, you know, dark stories, so to speak,
Sleuth
those are
Gate,
the ones,
all of those,
like, those are the ones that sell more.
But here's the thing, though. When it's all said and done, with the Leafs in this core, however long we look at it, let's look at a 6 or 7 year window. We'll get back into it.
I don't want to get into a Leaf chat here. We got Steve on the line.
Oh, yeah, let's not do that.
We'll get to that a little bit later on. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN baseball analyst. So what do you make of this, Steve? Manny Machado to the Padres, 10 years, $300 million with an opt-out after 5 years. That sounds like a pretty big win for the Players Association.
Yeah, I would think so, too. And you know, I think I'm hoping that what it will do is quiet down all of this negative chatter about some problem with the collective bargaining agreement, because you've got a small market team that's not ready to compete, that's one of the rebuilding teams that spent $30 million a year on a player, and it's hardly going to move the needle this year. I mean, they were 66 and 96 last year. Maybe they get to 75 wins this year, maybe. And so the reality is they spent $30 million this year, and they're still going to be a last-place team. But they look at it saying, we're rebuilding. We're going to be good in the next few years with our young players. It's not often you get a shot at a superstar player, and you don't always get the perfect timing. They can wait a couple years to when they're closer to winning, but then players might say no to them at that point, and they're going to be left holding the bag. So they got out in front of it a little bit. For Machado, I think that it's a good save for Dan Lozano. We kept hearing $175 million for him. Nobody more giving him more than $25 million a year. He pulled out $30 million a year for 10 years and actually turned down an offer, from what we understand, with a higher AAV of over $30 million for 8 years, $250 million from the White Sox, with a chance to make close to $350 million if he vested options and such. They took the guarantee, though, on the back end of the deal, and I think a pretty significant deal. And an opt-out after 5 years, where he can be a free agent again. I think the structure of the deal matters. If they front-load the money, and then he can opt out after 5 years, he might end up with a more significant payday if he can get another five-year deal on the back end. So we'll see where it goes. But I think a win for the Padres, and certainly a win for Machado and Lozano.
Were the Padres a team that you kind of heard were sniffing around, or this completely out of the blue? How surprised were you at this?
Oh, shocked by this. I mean, because, if I were the Padres, I wouldn't have signed him for that. I wouldn't even bet a player in that, because I think they're at least 3 years away from winning. They've got Fernando Tatis Jr. coming, a young shortstop who's going to be a superstar. He's their Vlad Guerrero Jr. He's that level. He's a real impact player. He's going to be a shortstop. Machado will play third base. But, I mean, Eric Hosmer was a bad sign, 2 years ago. He's not the kind of player that they thought, or last year it was, not the kind of player that they thought. And he's got like $126 million left on his deal. Will Myers is overpaid. They're going to have to hope their prospect pitchers come along, because they can't afford to get out and buy pitching in the free agent market. So, look, it's a risk on their part, but one they thought to take. I just don't see them as a real player. And what I don't understand is, if you're going to spend $300 million, how do you not know it in November? Mm-hmm. Like, they weren't players on this at all until, into December and early January, and all of a sudden they end up with a meeting with Machado. Like, how did you not know you had $300 million available to spend, and that you wanted to spend it on one of these guys? Why were you in at the last minute? But it doesn't matter. They end up getting the deal done.
How does this affect Bryce Harper? Team, dollars, term? Does this kind of speed things up for him or what?
Well, there was all this chatter that Harper had two teams over $325 million in their offers to him, and that there was traction going. Everybody thought the Phillies were going to be that team. Now, the Phillies say that the value for Machado got beyond what they thought was appropriate, which is interesting. For a team that said they were going to spend stupid money, they didn't get stupid. They had a limit. Now, all along, we kept hearing that their preference was Machado over Harper. And if that's the case, can they give Harper more than what they were willing to offer Machado, which wasn't 3 years, $300 million? The White Sox, we know, drew a line in the sand that they weren't willing to go beyond the $250 million guaranteed in an eight-year deal. They seem unwilling to do that for Harper as well. So I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that the music's coming to an end, and there's two people that don't have dance partners, and it's the Phillies and Bryce Harper. But I don't know where that deal ends up going. How does it get beyond $300 million if there's no competition beyond the White Sox for the Phillies to get the deal done? So my guess is that Boris will pull a rabbit out of his hat. He'll end up with more than $300 million for a 10-plus year deal.
Well, my read on the situation, Steve, was from a Padres perspective, Machado probably had no interest in going there in November, but then word started to leak over the weekend. He was simply in it for the money. whoever's willing to pay me the top dollar, that's where I'm going. And I think the Padres said, okay, we're willing to do that. We'll give you the money, so we actually feel like we can get you. It wouldn't be surprising at all to me if they were shocked in San Diego that they actually landed this guy.
Weren't people in Chicago shocked too, Steve? Because they...
The White Sox are in the same spot as the Padres. They've been rebuilding and blowing it up for. They won 62 games last year. They're brutal too.
Yeah, they're both in the same place, right? Both rebuilding with some top prospects coming. Eloy Jimenez is a stud for the White Sox that we're going to see this year. He's their Fernando Tatis, and their Vladimir Guerrero Jr. They're real stars, these young guys. But you know, they were the one thing that was clear is they weren't willing to go to the 10-year deal, the White Sox, and that kind of came out early. And it seemed to me that they weren't going to get any of these guys because if you want a player to go to Chicago, to the second team in Chicago, and you're a team that's going to have to suffer for the next 3 years until you figure out how to win, then you're going to have to pay a premium to get the star to go there. You're not going to get them for the same deal offered by anybody else. And so that's where the Padres went. They went to separate themselves from where the Phillies were and from where the White Sox were. And it seems to me that you know, if they want Harper, they're going to have to do the same thing, and it doesn't seem like the White Sox are willing to do it. So I think that the White Sox are going to get left holding the bag with nobody this offseason.
With Steve Phillips, our MLB analyst, so the past couple of days in Toronto, I'm sure you're aware of this, it's been all about dissecting the comments from Marcus Stroman on Sunday, and Kevin Pillar was in front of the cameras and the microphones today down in Dunedin, and he was asked basically to respond to Stroman, and specifically the idea that there aren't enough veterans and that the clubhouse could use some help. And this is what Pillar said earlier this morning.
You know, fortunately, I've been here for a long time, and I've been around some pretty good leaders, and I've seen the way they went about leading, whether it was by their actions, by their words. I've been able to process over this offseason how I want to go about it, things that I've witnessed, things that I've really thought was a good way of going about it, things I saw that I didn't really like from some of the veterans. And ultimately, this is something that I've wanted for a long time. You know, I just kind of, you know, bit my tongue and went out and tried to lead by example, knowing that there was guys that were ahead of me in the pecking order, and just tried to learn from them. And, you know, when I was asked to speak, I spoke up, but for the most part, I just stayed in my lane.
So my read on that, Steve, is Kevin Pillar is saying, I disagree with Stroman. There is enough leadership in the clubhouse right now, myself included. It should include him, Sanchez, and other veterans that are here. I don't want to hear about what Stroman's complaining about. And furthermore, on top of that, he's saying those vets that you love so much, Stroman, I didn't really love them. I didn't think they were that great as vets. What do you make of that comment?
Yeah, I kind of heard the same thing, that he wants to be a leader. He's given it some thought. And what we do from those that come before us is we learn what we like about what they did, and we learned how not to do it, right? We learned, you know, that's what we all do, is that everybody has a different style. You figure out, you take a little bit of what you like from everybody that impacted you in some way. If things that you think people tried to do that you weren't in favor of, then you eliminate those. But I think he recognizes that there was some people and players and leadership roles that didn't quite do it the way that certainly didn't impact him. So I heard it that way too. And the other thing is, with a rebuilding organization, there's a part of when you run that team, and you're a general manager of that team and a manager of that team, you want to instill the Blue Jays way of doing things. And you hope that started in the minor leagues, that you don't necessarily need a veteran to tell you how to do it, because you've learned the way that you're expected to do it. You've learned the expectations, you've learned the consequences, and you're accountable to that. And you hope that there's that feeder system where your players come up there, and it's nice to have leaders to help you deal with the emotions of struggling at the major league level. But when it comes to being a professional, you hope that's already instilled. You don't need veterans to do it. And what happens is, we saw the Astros add veteran leaders a couple years ago when they added Carlos Beltran and Brian McCann. They did it on the brink of winning. They didn't do it when they were all, you know, figuring out, getting their head kicked in a little bit at the major league level. They waited a bit. So, you know, Marcus Stroman, you know, he's coming off of a 5.54 ERA. And it's hard to be a leader when you're not performing well. It's really hard to be the leader when you've struggled yourself, right? And it's hard to call out the organization for doing everything they can to win when your results weren't very good. And I think that's kind of where Stroman finds himself. Yet I appreciate his desire to sort of lead by example with the young players, but I wish he'd lead by example and not say it, right? He doesn't have to do it by talking. He needs to do it by action, by performance, by getting the job done, by his preparation, by his work ethic, all of that, which he can do. But the talking part of it creates an us against them, which is counter to the direction of where this organization wants to go.
Always appreciate it, Steve. We'll do it again early next week. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN Jays and MLB analyst.
Just wanted to ask him if he would have a meeting, like just the old, can you please shut your mouth meeting? Like what? Or did they just ignore it? Or
I think they have to ignore it because I think Stroman's going to say, pay me, and I'll shut up. Like, that's another thing that came out of yesterday. I saw a couple of people being like, well, Stroman was calling out the organization, and that's a great thing. Do you think he would have called them out if they offered him a big contract and he signed it?
He'd say, this is the greatest place ever to play baseball.
Do you know how different his mood and attitude would have been? Like, everything came back to the fact that he knows he's being traded, and they didn't give him money in the offseason. So he has no time for Atkins and Shapiro. That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
If they signed him long-term, he would have said, we're going to catch people off guard this year. I love this front office. We've got the veterans here, blah, blah, blah. He didn't get the money, didn't get his contract, deserve it either, and now he's pissed.
Yep.
Artemi Panarin is pissed if he had big plans at Shea Paris tonight because John Tortorella just sandbagged him at an absolutely epic level. We'll tell you about that next. TSN 1050's trade deadline coverage is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Subaru Confidence in Motion. We're less than a week away, and everyone is on high alert because Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, reporting that sounds like Matt Duchene will not play for Ottawa on Thursday night. So he may be done. He may never play for that team again because the belief would be they're going to trade him. So don't play him because if he plays, he might get injured. And then all of a sudden, you got a very different story on your hands. And in Columbus, people are on high alert to find out what's going to happen with Artemi Panarin. And they lost at home to Tampa last night. They're in Montreal tonight. And Panarin is not playing. Breaking news this hour. He is out. He's sick. And immediately people are like, come on. That means you're trading him. Well, John Tortorella, he has decided to give you a full-blown, fully detailed explanation.
I was told he's sick, not eating, he's puking. You want me to go into the whole entire triad as far as what happened today with him so we can get that speculation done with as far as that he's going to be moved? He his pants, he was puking, he was doing everything. So, enough.
Full details. Here's our Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. What do you make of that out of John Tortorella?
I just want to know if he did it in Niagara Falls. So I married an axe murderer, great line.
Absolutely.
Yes. Charlie.
Charlie.
Charlie. Show him the pictures.
Show him the picture.
Show him the pictures of when you...
Just a sewer job.
Heed.
Heed down.
Hands now. Move that melon about. Heed. That's one of the best. Like, that's such an underrated movie.
That's Mike Myers doing his own dad, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good Scarberian, Mike Myers.
Yeah. The Scottish, the Scotsman from Scarborough.
Real mad he was at the Colonel, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he gets so, there's like five families.
Couldn't see a thing that either. That, his bifocals were like ridiculous.
Awesome.
That's what I thought of when I heard Torts there.
Yeah. Just getting the message across.
He bleeped Panarin. His pants in Niagara Falls.
Right. Yeah. Well, so I guess, are we supposed to take that at face value?
Yeah, I think that was Torts' idea, was let's not go down this rabbit hole of speculating that they're holding him. And there's another obvious reason why that's not the case, and that's because Columbus needs every point it can possibly get. They're trying to make the playoffs. I don't know what percentage to put on Panarin being traded at the deadline, but I wouldn't put it a lot over 50%, to be honest with you. Like, I think they could well keep him.
Well, team's got to be thinking, why would we pay a bunch of assets for him when we can sign him for free if we're...
That too. But he is he's a game changer. So if you want to win the cup and you think it helps you, then you could. But you're right. The price may be prohibitive. And as I've said many, many times before, and this whole own rental thing, think about it for a minute. So if Team A decides, they call up the Columbus Blue Jackets and says, we're giving you a first round pick and we're giving you a B-level prospect. Do you want that? And they're like, no, we want more than that. That's all we're giving you. Take it or leave it. If not, he's going to walk into the sunset at the end of the season and you get nothing for him. So then if it makes sense for a team to give up a first-round pick and a B-level prospect to get him, does it not make sense for Columbus to forego the offer of a first-round pick and a B-level prospect to keep him
right
as your own right. rental?
But you better get in.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But
they're
that's,
only a point in right now.
Yep, and then it's pretty crazy over there in that division.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he does end up going, it seems like Boston and Nashville. Those are the two teams everyone is linking him to. Is that accurate? Are there other teams?
Yeah, I think Boston's sitting there waiting to see what happens with Mark Stone. So there's, any of the teams that would be in on Panarin would also be in on Mark Stone, and we'll talk about him, I'm sure, before too long here.
Yeah.
But,
Wayne Simmons be another guy. But
well, everybody's on. Like you've got the big boys, Panarin, Stone, if he becomes available. Duchesne, who's available. And then you've probably got everybody else. Simmons and Ferland and Nyquist and on and on and on it goes. All right. These guys just one step down from those three guys that would be perceived as game changers at the deadline.
Well, you mentioned in Ottawa, and Matt Duchesne, Dregs is reporting, will likely not play on Thursday night. I know that's been a discussion this week. Whether or not you should sit out guys. I mean, that seems to make, especially in Ottawa, they're the worst team in the league. Why would you play a guy?
They're not, it's not like Columbus where they need the points.
Right.
It is what it is. And
but can you sit out Stone if you're still negotiating?
No.
You'd have to play him?
I would think you would still, but I think, I'm hopeful. I mean, we've been saying it every day for 2 weeks that the next 24, 48 hours. But before the Sens play Jersey on Thursday, I think the Sens will certainly know and probably will know, too, as to whether or not which direction this is going to go. Sens put a big push on last week. It sounds like they made some significant offers to Mark Stone. And to this point in time, we don't believe that there's been a response. And I think that response probably comes in the next day or two. And ostensibly before Thursday's game. So, maybe Mark Stone's going to be in Matt Duchesne territory on Thursday night, or maybe he's not.
So what would be the holdup? Like, if they've offered him something significant, is it
I think it's Devils? I think it's just the player deciding,
Not like signing bonus stuff? Do you think Ottawa
I think we're just kind of spitballing here because nobody's talking. But if the Sens come with good faith offers to sign Stone, before you start negotiating off of those, you want to do it in good faith, too. So if you're not going to stay, then don't waste everybody's time.
Exactly.
Going right. Arguing about signing bonus and structure and all this kind of stuff. So think long and hard about what you want to do. And in fairness, the Sens have had a really busy schedule lately. They've been playing a lot of games, like almost every other day. And so I think, this is probably the first time in a while they've had back-to-back days off. So I think that'll give him time to catch his breath and sort out what he wants to do and then let the Sens know, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider in studio. We talked about this at 4, the Maple Leafs. Everyone on the outside has decided, okay, we're all going to be in the same box, and the only thing they're going to be wanting is grit and a right shot defenseman. That's it, And that's fine. It's all good. And I think most people will concede that that makes some sense. But I'm not sure how often we consider where Kyle Dubas comes into play and what he might actually be wanting to do. Like, do you get the sense that's actually his wish list, or could he?
Well, I think it's his wish list to some degree, too. Certainly right shot D would be. Grit's a funny thing. Everybody gets hung up on heavy or grit, and I think what Dubas will be looking at is, I want somebody that competes hard. I want somebody that maybe is versatile, can play the wing, can play center. I want somebody that can take face-offs. I want somebody that can kill penalties. I want somebody who's a multi-purpose guy that the coach is going to want to play, and somebody who plays really hard and brings an added dimension that they don't have as much of. So I think that's kind of what they're looking at, and so it you know, everybody always gravitates towards Simmons and Ferland, the two guys that are, quote-unquote, you know, play sort of a power, toughness, combination of scoring plays, net front presence, all those things, disruptive, fight if necessary. So, yeah, those guys, I guess. But I don't believe the Leafs are prepared to pay any significant price for rentals of that level. And there's probably, as I've said before, there's probably a lot of lowercase guys that they're looking at that are not highly advertised and being talked about that fit some of the requirements that the Leafs are looking for.
Do you think it's an advantage for the Leafs that they probably know who they're playing in the first round? Like, it feels like it's Boston again.
Yeah, it does. It does. I don't know if it's an advantage or a disadvantage. I guess you could try to tailor your team, but I'm not sure, you know.
What's the sense of tailing your team if you get through? Like, then you got Tampa. It's like it wouldn't really.
Yeah, like, I you know, the whole toughness thing to me, it's not so much about toughnesses. And listen, when I watch the Leafs play, the number one question I have isn't, quote-unquote, their toughness. It's just, will they play a hard enough game? And I don't mean toughness in the sense of size. I don't mean toughness in terms of hitting. I just mean, will they consistently compete? You heard Mike Babcock talk about the game on Saturday night. And he basically was really critical of his team. And he said, we gave them the exact thing that they were going to do. And they didn't want to work hard enough to get through it and do the things that we told them to do.
Right.
And so it's a team that relies on a lot of young players. And they haven't won a playoff series yet. And maybe they're going to do really well this year. But until I see them do it in the playoffs, I don't know that they're capable of doing it on a consistent basis. That and I don't know that bringing in one forward that plays on the third or fourth line is going to necessarily change that. It can help it. But I think at the end of the day, it's on all those guys to compete hard and compete consistently. And I think that's the key. And that's where, you know, there's not going to be many Boston Bruins taking a night off. And, well, I think especially the number one line.
Well, exactly. And that's what it comes down to. Okay, great. You go out there and acquire Michael Ferland on your fourth line. He's not going on the ice against Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak.
To me, it comes
doesn't
back
make
to,
a difference.
But it comes right back to guys like 34. Auston Matthews is your face of your franchise. He has to have a monster playoff by using his body, winning those 50-50 battles, all the things that he's capable of doing and we see in the regular season.
And be better than Bergeron at least four times.
Exactly. Like, battle a lot.
Better than him.
And
not even better.
But it's like, we've seen guys go through the process in the playoffs. That's why you have to go through the process. But, you know, there's got to be another level, another gear. Oh, you've played deep into the playoffs. You've seen, you know, the type of effort level it takes from guys that you wouldn't expect out of it. And it's not just, like you say, if you're facing up against the Boston Bruins, it's not Backes that you're worried about. It's how hard Bergeron and Pastrnak and Marchand compete on pucks.
Well, in theory, if you look at it on balance, the Leafs should have a built-in advantage. Because if you can get either the Tavares line or the Matthews line to play even against, somehow play even, which is hard to do because they're arguably the best line in the league. And
especially against the Leafs.
Yeah, exactly. But if you can get a line to play even against those guys, then you should, in theory, have more offensive depth up and down your lineup to go the rest of the way. But, you know, it's all TBD once the playoffs start because it's a different game.
Bob McKenzie, Hockey Insider in studio. Let's do some rapid fire here, less than a week away from the trade deadline. We've touched on the Leafs, touched on Ottawa, the Habs. Are you expecting anything, or is Bergevin being honest when he said he's out of the rental market?
Yeah, I don't, you know, listen, everybody's always looking to do hockey deals if you can, the same old story. If you can upgrade your team, you're going to do it. But I don't think he wants to deviate from the plan. And the plan is he's got a gazillion draft picks last year. He's got another gazillion draft picks this year. He wants to keep drafting those kids and filtering them into the lineup as soon as they're ready. And in the meantime, just do what you're continue to do what you're doing.
Winnipeg.
Big game hunting. Stone is the number one target.
So more so than Duchesne?
Much more so, I think.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's the reasoning there? I mean,
you know, it's funny because a year ago, they said, we need a second-line center. We want to slot Little on the third line, and we want to bring in a second-line center. And they did it, and they got Stastny, and it was a great move. He fit in really well. He was a, you know, the bumper spot in the power play was very good. Second-line center, very good. And here we are a year later, And it's virtually the identical scenario, but the vibe and the word coming out of Winnipeg is, yeah, you know what? We're happy with Little as our number two center. We don't feel like we need a center, but boy, we would love to get a winger like Mark Stone who could be a game changer for us. And maybe that's because Ehlers has been injured for as long as he has been, and Line A's game is dried up right now. And so maybe the idea of bringing in a winger who can do the things Mark Stone does is really attractive, much more so now than it was last year when Line A was shooting the lights out and Ehlers was really good, and all the, you know, Connor and all these wingers, that was an area of strength for them last year. It's not as strong this year because of performance as opposed to personnel. But that seems to be the feel right now in Winnipeg is, Mark Stone's the guy.
Calgary, who's having, I mean, one of the surprise seasons of the year. Yeah. Mark Giordano did it again yesterday. I mean, this guy,
what a play.
Unbelievable. All the focus when we talk about them is on goaltending. Yeah. But
I actually thought the play, and I don't even know if this is the right terminology, but that was a man versus a boy. Because that was Clayton Keller that he walked and just dummied right to the net on that play.
Yeah.
And like, Giordano's, what, 35 years
35.
Old? And he's grizzled, too. Like, he is put together. And he was fired up to score that goal. And Keller could have angled him off, but there was no way he was going to win that physical battle. But that was a beautiful play. And, yeah, I mean, Calgary, what do you think they are?
Well, they're big game hunting, too. If Mark Stone is available, they'd want to try to get in on that. I think they'd want to look at all their options. You know, they're waiting to hear on James Neal. There's some talk that he might be out weeks.
Doesn't the agent, Bobby, from Mark Stone say, look, there is so much interest in you, you're going to get some monster offers. Like, just sit around and wait it out. You can set up shop.
7 years versus eight, I guess.
Well, I think that's ultimately that's probably the plan, I would think.
Would he get the setup shop treatment? Would he get the Tavares in L.A.? Is Stone in that territory?
I think he'd be pretty close.
He would in Winnipeg. It's his hometown.
Yeah.
His brother plays in Calgary, you know, so there's lots. But Calgary would, you know, they'd be one of those teams that would say, hey, listen, if we had to start the playoffs with the team we got now, we're okay. And to a degree, I believe that. But, you know, if they could add another gun, especially if Neil's out for any length of time.
Man, you want to win that division, too.
Yeah.
Really want to win that division. Although Vegas, I mean, they're not what they were.
They're struggling right now.
They're struggling.
But you have no idea who you're playing against. It's going to be one of those disasters out west,
right.
You know? So
right.
It'll be... You know, if it's Mini, if it's Colorado, like Colorado won last night, like there's Chicago
Dallas.
Sniff around, Dallas, like it's the That's, West is, I mean, these last 20 games.
St. Louis has popped back up into the divisional spot now.
Right.
Dallas and Mini have dropped down.
Yeah, St. Louis is comfortably in a playoff spot. It's crazy. Well, how about Vancouver? We'll avoid Edmonton. We talk about them all
Vancouver,
the time.
They're trying to add some scoring, but they don't like the price of rentals, and they don't really want to use future assets on rentals if they don't have to. So they'll sniff around on guys that have younger guys that maybe need a change of scenery or what have you. So that would be something they'd kind of look favorably on. But again, they're... You know, and again, they'd like to try and nail down that last playoff spot. But with the injuries they've had with Edler and Tanev, it's been tough.
Right, and Vertanen's out now.
Yeah,
for a month or so.
Yeah, he's out for a month. Cracked ribs. Getzlaff.
Getzlaff mowed him over.
Yeah. Well, you got Minnesota at 60 points, Colorado, Chicago, and Vancouver all at 59.
Well, in Minnesota, I mean, they could be clearing the decks there. You know, Charlie Coyle.
See, that's a guy that's interesting for me, Coyle.
Yeah.
I like him as a player. You want to talk about maybe somebody that flies under the radar, who's tough to play against, can score, kind of a versatile player.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't surprise, and I'm not floating the name, but that's somebody I could see Kyle coveting here in Toronto, like a player like that.
I just don't know how you can afford him.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, that's the type of player that we're not even talking about, but you'd circle and say, because I like that Coyle.
Yeah, I got some sneaky good players.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce Boudreau is guaranteed a playoff spot.
Well, he almost dropped an F-bomb on live
national TV last night.
The coach interview, in-game.
Those are dangerous, man.
Yeah, he was in game mode and just backed out of it at the last second. Was that Bush that was interviewing him? Who was that?
Ryan was it Boucher? NBC?
I think so.
Yeah,
But I don't think Gabby loves this owner giving the general manager the green light to clear the decks.
Yeah.
Take take two or three steps back if it means major steps forward down the road, because I'm not sure if this is Gabby's last year in his contract. It might be. Yeah. And if it's not, it still might be.
It may not make a difference. It's all semantics. All right, Bob. Good luck in the next 6 days. We'll get you back in here later in the week. But
yes, you will.
It's going to be a wild ride, man. It is every single year. Trade Center next Monday on TSN.
Followed by the Leaf game.
That's right. And it's the Leafs Buffalo, right, on the Monday night.
O-Dog's working at all.
Right. Well, Ray's going to be on the panel. Ray and Gordon on the panel. And then they're going downtown to call the game, right?
That means you're going to be
busy. Might need a little five-hour energy that day.
I can see that happening.
I'll be closing my little room down there with a cot in it.
A shutdown pregame?
Oh, yeah. Pregame shutdown. If I hear anybody barking outside of it, like Chaser's dog barking in the interview.
Yeah, it won't go well.
I'll go crazy.
The quizmaster will just start barking outside the door.
He'll want you to come back in and break something down.
Yeah.
I'll be breaking nothing down during that game.
Oh, we'll see. All right, Bob.
All right, boys, thanks.
We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Leafs in action in St. Louis. We'll tee it up. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Puck drop at 8 p.m. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Buffalo's paying 220 in Florida. I keep going back to the well on the Sabres, thinking that they're going to dig out and they're going to get rocking again.
It better start happening soon.
At some point.
They got to start winning, yeah. And Florida, I mean, it's the Panthers, right? It's not like they're exactly world beaters themselves.
But that goal the other day by
Sasha Barkov is a beast.
That was ridiculous.
He is a beast.
What is his real name, by the way?
Alexander.
Oh,
I don't know. It's a Finnish thing.
Okay. Gorilla.
Exactly.
So I'm on Buffalo. I'm on Carolina. You know, these guys, they're going up against the world now, man. Yeah. It feels like a movie script.
It's the jerk.
Like, this is Major League.
The jerk store versus the world.
Right. Justin Williams is Jake Taylor.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I think you're right.
Who's Serrano? Who's Ricky Vaughn?
They could go on a heater. You're right.
I think they are going to come out of the gate flying. They get the Rangers at home tonight. I'm on Carolina.
Guns blazing.
And Montreal, I think, wins tonight. No Panarin for Columbus. Columbus played last night. Both desperate teams, but...
Well, Torts would be not happy.
No. Throw down 20, you can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So it's Leafs Blues, which means the Tap Man will be in here in just a moment with Greg Gilbert. Why don't we replay the whole clip from the first intermission when we were in Vegas on Thursday night? Because we might have to...
The Tap Man will come in here and scissor kick the door down. And attack us.
I'm worried. Oh, there he is. There get him in here. Tell him to get in here.
Come on, get in here.
All right.
Yes, guy.
Because we're genuinely concerned that our relationship may have been spoiled here.
Wow.
Because of our own immaturity and stupidity, quite frankly.
We were enjoying ourselves, but now we've crossed the line. And this guy hates our guts.
Years ago, we started a segment called Yes, Guy.
Oh, really, guy? So, we did we?
Yeah. So we're glad you're in here, Tabman, because I was picking up on a vibe earlier. I think we may have bothered you on Thursday night during the intermission.
Well,
this is what happened at the end of the sit-down with us in Vegas.
Gentlemen, thanks very much. Enjoy your stay in Vegas. I don't want to hear a word about it, but enjoy your stay.
Yes, guy! Hey!
Wow. Just think of the lawyer's fee on that one. That's kind of interesting because you were in Vegas, in American City, when you did that.
Right.
Yeah. That's like a double copyright infringement.
So we're going international.
This is copyright. International laws have been violated now.
Yeah. Well, I know. We love you, buddy, but we don't want to bother you or anything like that.
No, no bother at all. The lawyer handles that.
Okay.
We just felt that we crossed the line. And
I thought when we first started doing game night, and I came up with a segment. Yes, guy. Oh. No, guy. It was a good idea, and it picked up some traction.
Another creative co-host. Oh yeah, no.
Right. How many have you been through now with Yes Guy, No Guy? You got Gilbert, you got yourself, we had O'Sullivan was kicking around for a while. We've had a few.
Absolutely. Scotty Mack?
Scotty Mack, yeah.
Well, that's right, yeah. That was the early days, you and Scotty Mack were rocking.
A lot of co-hosts for Yes Guy, No Guy.
Too many co-hosts, the title of my book.
That should be it. The only consistent is you.
Yeah.
The Tapman, you always know what you're getting.
So you're not mad at us, though, right?
Oh, no, not at all. All right, I love you guys. Are you kidding?
Because we were worried about that.
No, not at all.
There was a vicious rumor.
Really?
Well, Brian started. He did.
I thought I picked up on a vibe earlier, Tapman. I was like,
I'm surprised you could in Vegas. I mean, you sounded like you were having some fun.
We had a very good time in Vegas. We had a very, very good time. So you and Greg are coming up next with the pregame, 7-8.
Yeah,
Leafs in St. Louis tonight. Should be a good game. I mean, both teams playing really well.
Yeah, and, you know, the Blues with that 10-game winning streak, 3 straight shutouts. I mean, does it continue on? Or
I think the Leafs are...
We're hoping that.
Leafs have to bounce back tonight. They were brutal on Saturday night.
Will the Leafs bounce back? Yes guy or no guy?
Yes guy.
Wow. Yes guy.
Yeah, see?
Yes guy.
Yes guy.
We're gonna
Yes guy!
We're going to be back to Yes Guy, No Guy tomorrow
at 4 p.m.
We're going to chat then.